we just, for the committee, the intent is to, and we'll be meeting every morning this week, the Transportation Committee did not finish their bill, so we thought we would have that last week. There's a chance at some point this week we might double up. We're in session, I believe, Friday and Saturday, so I kept Friday open for the possibility of some problem, so we have extra time on the agenda. I'm hoping we can not have night meetings. I'm not sure with the larger bills, with the E-12 bill, the Human Services bill, whether or not there might be the need to go past the morning meeting. The other finance bill, just so members understand, the legacy bill is not an omnibus finance bill, so it's not subject to the deadline, and that won't be for a couple weeks or so. But we have Senate File 1236, Senator Bonoff, the higher education bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would start by just sharing a little bit about what our committee identified as our guiding principle and our objectives. You know, we hear a lot about that in the future, 75% of our young people are going to have some sort of post-secondary degree to meet the workforce needs of tomorrow. And so rather than have a guiding principle of 75%, you know, you wouldn't want to say which of the 25% you're leaving behind. And so our primary goal was that really every Minnesotan obtain a post-secondary degree, whether it's a certificate, a degree, or a diploma, and then stepping into the specific objectives to really meet that goal, we identified three objectives. One, reduce cost to students. Two, increase degree completion. And three, build a 21st century workforce. And because, Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonoff, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to reflect that we have a quorum presence, so we do need to adopt the division report. So let's do that. Senator Bonoff moves adoption of the division report to Senate File 1236. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill makes a serious commitment to our students and their families by making a substantial investment of $80 million to both the University of Minnesota and the MinSCU system. The $80 million to MinSCU helps build a 21st century workforce through leveraged equipment for training and additional resources in building and expanding programs in high demand professions. The $80 million to the U goes directly towards freezing tuition for the next 2 years and helps in their research mission by supporting MinDrive, Minnesota Discovery, Research, and Innovation Economy. We invest $80 million in the state grant program. We do this by increasing the tuition and fees cap to more accurately reflect the trends in the marketplace. This is meant to really allow our best and brightest, regardless of income, to go to the institution that truly meets their needs and, more importantly, their dreams. In addition, we increase the living and miscellaneous expense to, again, reflect the true costs of what it takes to live in today's economy. And then we include a pilot program for part-time students. We hear that the non-traditional student group is growing at a fast pace, and yet our student grant program has not changed over the years to accommodate their needs. And so in this bill, we do that. We utilize performance funding metrics to make sure that both the U of M and MinSCU are providing relevant post-secondary degrees in an efficient manner. We're saying that in the past, by the way, we have done performance metrics, but we've only held back 1%. And we have learned really from experts that that just is not a significant amount of money to change perhaps the trajectory of the things we want to change. And so at stake in this bill is a 5% holdback for each of the systems. MinSCU metrics are relate to their increase in degrees conferred, job placement, reallocation of administrative costs. Universities also, we focus on increasing grad rates for low-income students, increasing STEM degrees, increasing grad rates system-wide, and then cutting $15 million in administrative costs. So we believe the budget that we've put forward helps reduce financial barriers as well as addresses the rising debt load. Built into this proposal are many additional reporting requirements to ensure we have the utmost accountability and transparency. And we actually have, within this proposal, directed the Office of Higher Ed to determine should we have objectives around participation in the state grant program. There's been a lot of talk about whether or not we shouldn't limit the possibility of participating in the grant program based on do our institutions meet our metrics in general. And so we've asked that to be taken on in the interim. We know ultimately the success of our systems, our students, and their families directly impact the Minnesota economic environment, and it is this, with this in mind, we have proposed the budget that you have before you. Now I'll ask Ms. Weidman to take us through the spreadsheet.
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll begin by if you go to the middle of the first page and you go over to the Senate 1415 column, you'll see there the changes in the bill that would allocate the $80 million additional dollars into the state grant program. And that was done by increasing the cap for that is recognized in the formula for determining the award that a student will get from $10,488 to $13,000. It increases the living expense allowance from $7,000 to $7,940. There is also a change in terms of how basically independent students without dependents are taxed, because currently that group of students is taxed at a higher rate in terms of how the award is calculated than other groups of students. And then there is the proration pilot, which is the program that Senator Bonhoeff referenced for part-time students.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps the
testifier
please indicate the line item that you are referencing.
Yeah, Madam Chair, unfortunately, when this... Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Let's switch them.
Okay. These are my notes. Oh, yeah, these. Those changes, Senator Newman, are on lines 23 through 27. Moving down then to line 37 through 39, there is an increase there for the biennium from $3.7 million to $6.2 million for scholarships for American Indian students. There is a very long waiting list for this particular program, and this would help reduce the waiting list. And if we go over to the top of page 2, line 44, again looking at the Senate 1415 column, additional money had to be put in the bill to help pay for the state's obligation to North Dakota for the reciprocity agreement that Minnesota has with that state. Basically, then, for all the other programs, safety officer, survivor, state work study, and
excuse me, if I can ask about the reciprocity, we have agreements with what, two states?
Mr. Chair, we have agreements with North Dakota and Wisconsin that require interstate payments, and then there are also agreements with some of the border institutions in Iowa, and we also have one, I believe, with Manitoba. But there are no interstate payments for those.
So with Iowa, it's only with institutions?
Correct. It's an institution-institution agreement, and it's just basically the border.
And what's the status of Wisconsin reciprocity? Is that reflected in the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair, that tuition reciprocity line item would cover any payments for either the North Dakota or Wisconsin.
And so that would be
this
42.
This additional money is strictly to pay for obligations to North Dakota. There are no obligations at this point to Wisconsin.
Because there's so many of our students who are...
Mr. Chair, that's correct. There are more Minnesota students that are going to North Dakota, particularly along the border. And in North Dakota, the graduation rates are declining, so it's sort of a combination of factors that are causing that.
And I never realized there was any kind of an agreement with Manitoba. What is that?
Again, I believe that that's strictly with one institution. It's an institution-to-institution. I think that was, if I remember correctly, that was when Senator Stumpf chaired the committee. I believe that was an initiative that of Senator Stumpf's.
And, Mr. Chair, if you would like more information, we can call Tricia Grimes to the table.
That's okay. Did Senator Stumpf, you remember this at all? Or how many years ago was that?
Mr. Chairman, I do. I don't know exactly how many years ago, but we have only an hour's drive north of my district. We have a city of about 1.5 million people, Winnipeg, and they have some excellent universities, they do actually, there's a number of Minnesota students that go up there, and there's a number of students from Manitoba that come down not so much to our institutions. A lot of them go to UND and Grand Forks. Obviously, hockey's an important issue there. But I think the approach we used was that we should be open both ways, and because there's always something to be gained, whether it's just the relationship between a foreign country and the United States, or commerce, or educational exchanges. So that's kind of the rationale that we used a number of years ago.
Okay, thanks.
Senator Cohen?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Stumpf, I would ask that. I'm wondering why you overlooked the University of Emerson, Manitoba, and went all the way up to Winnipeg.
Hey, don't worry about that, Senator Stumpf. Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, continuing, basically all the programs going from lines 54 through 58 are at base level. On line 59, the appropriation for MinLink and Minitex, this is for sharing of library materials. We put an extra $600,000 in there for the biennium. And this is basically to bring them back almost to the level that they were at before we had to make cuts within the higher education budget. The line 62 and 63, those programs are at base level. Then starting on line 68 are a number of initiatives. The first one on line 68 is money for family practice residents at HCMC. This program previously was funded through the University of Minnesota. However, under this proposal, that money would be appropriated to the Office of Higher Education, which would then forward it on to HCMC for to pay stipends to family practice residents. Line 69 is a summer bridge program. This is a program that Senator Pappas had established several years back, and this basically just codifies that program and appropriates $200,000 for the biennium for that program. There's $750,000 in there for each year for Teach for America. Line 71 was a Senator Saxhog bill. This is tribal colleges currently get money from BIA.
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we go back to line 69 and 70? You explained the amount of money that's going into, but what are the programs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, the Summer Bridge Program is a program that is available to students the summer after they graduate from high school and prior to enrolling in college. And it's to help them kind of get up to speed so they don't have to take remedial coursework while they're in college. kind of reduced. This came about as concern about the amount of remedial education that students are taking, and so this was to address that issue. And the Teach for America, this was a Senator Bonhoff
initiative. Senator Miller.
Senator Miller initiative, and this is a alternative licensure program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Line 71, the tribal college grants. This would be money currently that tribal colleges in the state get sort of a per capita amount from the Bureau of Indian Affairs to support the education of Indian students attending their schools. This money would be used to support non-Indian students who attend those tribal colleges. And the line 72, the Collaborative Urban Education Program, this again would be money going to Augsburg for a program that they have for, again, it's an alternative teacher licensure program.
Mr. Chair, when I go through the language, I can speak a little more directly about that collaborative urban educator.
Mr. Chair, members, continuing on, the funding for Mayo on lines 81 through 83 is at base level. Then we would continue on to page 3. And there you will see the various initiatives that we funded for MNSCU. And we've put in $8 million for the biennium for education innovations. We put in $2 million for internships and apprenticeships. There's $19 million in there for leveraged equipment, and that program requires a match from businesses that participate in the program. There's $29 in there for retaining quality faculty. There's $12 for high-impact strategies for retention and success. This is basically various techniques that faculty would be using to keep students in school and help them progress towards graduation. And then the additional $10 million in there is for meeting needs in high-demand professions, and this would be to offer additional courses and sections in programs that employers need within the state. Then there is some money in there for Cook County Higher Ed. This is basically just to restore their funding level to what it was prior to reductions being made. Lines 100 and 101 basically are base level. These are funding. This is funding for MNSCU Central Office as well as the Learning Network of Minnesota. Then we'll continue on down to the University of Minnesota. And the money there is basically for two initiatives. The first one on line 110 is for tuition relief. That's $42.6 million for the biennium. And then their MnDrive initiative, which is money that would fund research in a number of different areas, such as manufacturing and neurological areas. There's $36 million in there for that. And then continuing on to page 4 on line 120, there is $1.2 million in there for within the health sciences specials at the U, and this would be to establish a loan forgiveness program for healthcare professionals. So overall, under this bill, the funding for higher ed is increased by just shy of $263 million, which is about a 10% increase from the forecast at 14-15 base.
Okay, thank you. Further questions for Ms. Wyben or Senator Bonhoeff on the spreadsheet? Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, now if we look at Article 2 in the bill, page 18, we have the PAPAS program, which is the High School to College Development Transition Grants that Ms. Weidman spoke about. On page 21, we've got the institutional reporting to the Office of Higher Ed, where we are requiring higher ed institutions to report specific information related to enrollment, job placement, debt-to-earnings ratio, and to provide this information on OHE's website. We want to make sure that our students, as they're choosing which institution to go to, that they're seeing whether or not these institutions have a track record of success as they make their decisions. The state grant program changes on page 22 are just with regard to the child care for state grant recipients. We, also on page 22, a Miller provision is with regard to MOOCs, and MOOCs really have the potential, members, to change the way higher ed is delivered. MOOC stands for Massive Online Open Courses.
So is this the Miller MOOCs or the MOOCs Miller?
This would be the Miller MOOCs. Ask Senator Miller, who's sitting here. And members, this is something that came out of both Stanford and Harvard, MIT, where we've got really just world-renowned professors leading, doing courses online that are having students internationally around the world take place in being part of those classes. And so when this begins to really take hold, you could see the change in potential costs for students. You can see its use and its application for remediation and the opportunity to have blended delivery using online, using open textbooks, all of this with our traditional systems. And so the university has actually taken advantage of this provision in this bill where we, prior to this, we actually prohibited the use of free courses being taught in Minnesota from outside companies. And so now this is permissive language that both allows for that and then later in the bill identifies that they could charge up to $100 associated with making sure there's the potential for accreditation, because that's ultimately where we'd like this to go, is students to get credit for taking part in these classes. On page 23, Senator Weber, go ahead.
Sir Westrom.
Mr. Chair, when you say kids take them for free, who's teaching them? I mean, another college, but they only can be in this state if they offer them for free or not more than $100 a piece?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, these courses are being taught by professors at universities all over the country, and then they anybody could take them, but in order for them to be considered as potential for credit, you'd have to have an agreement with a university in your state. So, for example, the two programs that came and testified before our committee were from companies, one Coursera that was out of Stanford, and then edX that's out of Harvard and MIT. The University of Minnesota is creating relationships with those to be able to look at what exactly they'd like their students to have able to them. In addition, there are these companies are offering, say, for example, algebra courses that could be used for remediation, and the way that you could be tested is through a testing service, and that's where the $100 come in. There's costs associated with these students actually proving that, yes, they did the work, they took the test, and then to be able to bring that forward.
Sure. Senator Bonhoeff, what I'm struggling with is, do they usually provide these classes for free, and are we, by capping it at 100, are we limiting the potential opportunity here? I mean, what if it costs $200 to get that accreditation done, or $100 to the college for offering the course and $100 for testing? Or, you follow what I'm saying? I mean, do we limit them? We say you can do it only if you're doing it for just about free, but in reality, in college, you're paying hundreds of dollars, if not to $1,000 a credit at times for courses already. So I'm just wondering if by putting such a low bar on there, if we limit it to.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, that's a good point. I might, if you wouldn't mind, I might defer to Senator Miller to address that, as it was his initiative.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Westrom, you're correct. We worked very closely with several parties, including the Office of Higher Education, to try to come up with language that will work and still allow these MOOCs to be offered in the state of Minnesota. It could be, at this point in time, the $100 is within reason, and I think is sufficient for the time being. At some point in the future, we might have to come back and reevaluate. But it's important for members to know that there are kind of three different parts of this. First is there's out-of-date language in Minnesota statute that technically does not allow these courses to be offered in the state of Minnesota, and this language does address that issue. So after we pass this and it's signed into law, any Minnesota resident will legally be able to take these free online courses. Now, where the charge comes in is, as Senator Bonhoff mentioned, if you want to take a test and get proxied for that test, there's a identity check to make sure that you are who you say you are, and then number two, that the test is accurate and being reviewed by somebody. There's also a charge if you want to receive a certificate that's saying that you completed this course. So really the charge comes in at some point in the future. If you want to get credit for that course, that's when the charge would come in. So we can discuss if it's something that we want to increase in this committee, but at this point, all the parties that are involved think that this number is sufficient.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you. The next provision was a provision offered by Senator Weber, and it's the Minsk Community Bank Reserve Project. This was a pilot that had been previously offered, and this expands that. It establishes a Minsk Reserve Project to allow up to 8 selected Minsk institutions to transfer certain reserve deposits from the state treasury to a community financial institution. It defines the participant eligibility, application process, sets evaluation requirements by the commissioner of MMB and the Board of Trustees. The next was a provision by
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Bonhoff, do you have a total amount that could be? I don't see any cap or any reference to what could be the maximum amount.
And Mr. Chair, I don't believe there is a cap, but Ms. King is here if she would like to address that.
Good morning. Good morning, Senator Cohen and members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Senator Stump, to your question, the last and first time that we did this program, we had about $2.5 million that was part of the pilot. But until we do a new RFP out to our schools and solicit interest, I'm unable to give you a number. The language is permissive as to number of participants, so until we put the next program together, I don't have a sense of that.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. King, if the 8 largest Minsk campuses would participate to the maximum, what would that amount be?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, if the 8 largest were to participate, it looks like it would be in the range of about $30 million.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Bono. Thank you, Ms. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, there's a Senator Miller provision that directs the OHE to analyze strategies to financially assist students in the timely completion of their higher ed program. And what this provision is really looking for is we know that as students get their grants or have loans, that oftentimes they end up not graduating. And so there's a grave concern that, in fact, our dollars are being wasted to some degree and students aren't getting what they intended to have happen when they first signed up. And so we wonder if, in fact, you couldn't structure, you know, the second year of the grant appropriation with a little, you know, give them more of it in the second year to incent behavior. And we want the Office of Higher Ed to look at what strategies are happening around the country that are working to try and increase that persistence and completion rate. Next is a Senator Claussen bill that directs the Office of Higher Ed to analyze the feasibility of a program that would assist Minnesota residents in refinancing student loans. We know that, you know, the state, we have different interest rates than what the students can find on the open market. And so is there a way that we can do more to allow students to take advantage of the good credit that Minnesota has? And so that's what Senator Claussen's bill is about. Senator Kent creates a two pilot programs for at-risk students with regard to mentoring. You know, we believe, and we're asking them to do pilots, that if each and every student had access to a mentor or to an advisor of sorts that could help them when the obstacles are in their path in terms of persistence and completion, that we would see that we would see much stronger results. Next is the state grant program institutional eligibility. Here we direct the Office of Higher Ed to issue a report regarding the best and appropriate data to evaluate the performance of higher ed institutions. The data will be used going forward as statutory criteria for participating in the state grant program. So, for example, if an institution's graduation rate is, say, 25%, well, maybe we don't want tax dollars to be going to students to go to a school that's graduating students at 25%. Or if they've got a default rate on their loans, the students, that is in excess of what we deem the appropriate standard, then we'd like to say those institutions shouldn't be part of our state grant program. And so we didn't want to overreact this session without taking the time to study it and bring those institutions together to help craft what those parameters should be. But you will see our committee coming forward with some hard and fast objectives with regard to institutions' eligibility.
Senator Cohen.
Mr.
Chair.
Yep.
Article 2 here, and now I think we're beyond the...
I'm still in Article 2, and I'm on page 28. And I'm going off a summary rather than page by page. Thank you. Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, do you have any more questions about that?
No, I don't. I just wanted to know where I was at. I was looking at this document as well here and trying to figure out the article.
Mr. Chair, I'm using a summary document that my staff had prepared for me. But. Okay, next... On page 28, we've identified things that we're looking for the university to report on. We direct the University of Minnesota to report statistics to the legislature regarding admissions and enrollment at the Twin Cities Medical School and projections thereof for the next 10 years. We know how important the medical school is to the state of Minnesota. We're actually going to be having a hearing in the next week on that. We direct the U of M to report statistics regarding the STEM program. We have invested a tremendous amount of our resources in those buildings and laboratories and resources associated with the STEM programs. We want to know how many students have applied, how many they're accepting, what are the results from our investments. We direct the U of M to report on their spans and layers analysis. We had an initial report right after the first part of that report was done, but the completion of that spans and layers analysis will be done in July, and we want to make sure they come back and deliver to our committee that report, as well as the university has engaged Huron Consulting to do a much broader analysis of how they might lower the overall costs. And in our bill, we actually direct the University of Minnesota to report to us with a plan going forward of how they are going to lower their costs. On page 29, a provision that was included, a Senator Claussen bill, to have a mental health issues summit. And we have appropriated some money to do that, as there is actually a mental health professional shortage in Minnesota. And as well as we know, as we look at some of the problems we're having in our E-12 system, that we want to make sure we have the right professionals doing the right intervention strategies, and so we are directing the higher ed community to convene the appropriate people together and come back to us with recommendations. There's a salary study in our bill that was actually put in our final committee meeting that directs MinSCU and U of M to conduct and report studies comparing faculty and staff numbers, salaries, and benefits with those of comparable non-Minnesota institutions. And members, you probably have been reading in the paper really since the Wall Street Journal article first came out, but a tremendous amount of attention is being given to just what are our administrators, our professors, our overall costs, what are those numbers and how do they compare? And we think those are valid questions. And I've been disappointed at some of the back and forth that's been in the paper that really defends the status quo. And I think we don't accept the status quo. And we think the overall numbers, it's important to lower these costs.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, was any thought given to include in the personnel that complete this study folks other than those that are already involved with the college and the university? In other words, it has the feel to me like maybe the same people who created the problem are the ones that are being asked to study the problem. So my question is anybody else other than university and MinSCU personnel and regents and those on the board going to be involved in looking at this problem?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, that's an excellent question, and we felt the same way, and so that's why the letter that Senator Bach and myself sent the university back in, I believe, February, said that their analysis, called the spans and layers analysis, could not be done internally. It must be done by an outside provider, and that's the report that we've got, the preliminary information, which showed that there is a tremendous amount of work to be done in that area, and we're going to have the final report in July. So they're studying in that spans and layers report four areas in administrative costs. They're studying IT, they're studying finance, they're studying human resources, and they're studying procurement. So those four things, because those are generally the places where you can see the greatest return when you attack them, see that your layers, and look at the overall cost. But then the committee felt that that didn't even go far enough. So this is an additional reporting beyond that professional analysis where we want to see just the line listing of what they're paying, not an analysis of it, but just a line listing compared to other universities. So that even goes beyond that report. And as I mentioned, they've now one of the things I learned, Senator Newman, when I first got involved in this is that other Big Ten universities a few years back came together and said they were going to share a contract with an outside provider. They had a few choices. They picked Accenture. Some are working with the Hackett Group, where they said, we want to tackle administrative costs. The university didn't choose to join them at that time, and now they have committed to go down this path. And so that's why they accepted our request to do the spans and layers, and they've even gone that one step farther to work with Huron. We actually had somebody from the University of Michigan, a professor who's leading the charge in Michigan with the cost-cutting effort, come to our committee. The chamber paid for his expenses. We were very grateful to cover his travel expenses and shared about the tremendous work Michigan's done to cut costs. So I know that's a long answer to your question, but we agree with you, and there is provisions in the bill that make sure there's outside expertise looking in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next is on page 30, 31, 32 is the Senator Kent is carrying the Office of Higher Ed's bill, which some of the things that are important in that bill that are worth noting is the provisions with regard to SLEDs. We are investing in the statewide longitudinal educational data system, which really is going to link the information we're getting about our students from pre-K all the way through post-secondary and then workforce. One of the challenges we have is the identifying number on the student to be able to follow them. We've got MARS numbers in the K-12 system, and then you've got your Social Security numbers in the public arena, and so there's a lot of challenges to make sure we're going to be able to adequately get information about what's working, what strategies are working, and then track the results of our students as they go forward. But that language is in the bill, and I would also say that Senator Peterson worked with the OHE and Senator Kent to make sure some of the things that he was working on from his work with the K-12 system were included in that. We do change the director position in OHE to a commissioner within this language. That was at the request of the governor. We modified the definition of independent student and eligible student. On page 33 is a provision by offered by Senator Dibble. And I think, you know, you always have one provision that gets the most amount of outside emails of anything else in a session. And for those of us on this committee, I think it was the research dogs and cats, the thousands of emails we got about people who were concerned about these dogs and cats are used really for the benefit of all of us in research. But yet there wasn't a provision that allowed them to be adopted with families who were willing to adopt them. And so that's what this bill did. And, you know, people around the country are concerned about these animals. And we did appreciate the outpouring of support, and we passed this bill quickly. Next, on page 34, Senator Saxhog, as Ms. Weidman said, was carrying a bill with regard to the Tribal College Supplemental Grant Assistance, allowing these university or community colleges who are providing the instruction to these students who don't meet eligibility standards with regard to the federal definitions, but yet they're still there, allowing them to get some assistance for that. We established the MIN Drive, which is the on page 38, that the University of Minnesota's key initiative. They're focusing on four strategic areas of research over the biennium: robotics, global food supply, treatment of brain conditions, and advancing the that industry. Senator Peterson had a bill for academic credit for military service that's included, as well as Senator Fischbach's veterans preference policy provision that's in there. And then finally, the state grant program, where we've made some major changes and really hadn't made these kind of changes in many, many years to make sure our state grant program is in keeping with what's happening in the marketplace. So we assigned the assigned family responsibility has changed from 0.68 to 0.50 for independent students without children. And in the past, independent students actually had to pay more because they were looked at as, well, they're working, so they have more money. But yet, that doesn't really make sense. They're working because they don't have money and they need to supplement their resources as they go to school. And so we wanted to make sure that it was a level playing field for those young people. We raised the assigned student responsibility. Our state grant program is built around a premise that it's a shared responsibility, the student, the state, the family. So we raised the assigned student responsibility to 50% because that's, I mean, really right now they're paying more like 60, and so it just more accurately reflects what's happening. We raised the tuition cap to 13. The governor went farther than this, but that's what we could afford to do in this bill. But we do agree philosophically with the governor that it's important to keep that cap reflective of what's actually being charged, so we let our best and brightest students have the greatest chance to go to those schools that they aspire to. We increased the LME, the Living and Miscellaneous Expense Allowance, to $79.40, again, a little less than the governor, but still moves us in the right direction. And we can't do exactly what the governor proposes because we've done something very big and innovative in our approach, and that is we've included provisions so that the MNSCU part-time students do get to have their tuition cap prorated by the percent of full-time for which they're enrolled. Finally, I would like to just go through briefly the performance metrics.
What page is that on in the bill?
I would...
The page in the bill.
Page...
Nine.
Page nine in your bill talks about our performance metrics. And just first as an overview, in the past several years, we have included performance metrics where we've said we're going to hold back 1% of funding for higher ed institutions based on attaining some identifiable goals. The more research we did, we learned that really best practices would say 1% just isn't enough, and that this is a trend happening around the country. We actually had a professor from the Lumina Foundation, Dr. Applegate, come and speak to us and tell us about what was happening nationally with regard to performance funding. And there's anywhere from, he recommends 5% at the bottom, to some states like Tennessee are doing 100% of their funding related to performance metrics. So in our bill, we have changed our floor, so to speak, where we're holding back 5% of the fiscal year 2015 appropriation based on the system's achieving 3 of 5 metrics. And members, I can tell you that we wrote these metrics in partnership. We didn't just say to MNSCU or to the University of Minnesota, here's your goals. We had several conversations, several meetings where we established what these were. And so beginning with MNSCU, their first metric is they increased by at least 4% in fiscal year 2013 compared to fiscal year 2010, graduates or degrees conferred. The second metric is to increase by at least 1% the persistence and completion rate for fall 2012 entering students compared to the fall 2010. Metric number three, increased by at least 4%, the 2013-related employment rate. As we know, it's not just enough for these kids to go to school. They need to get jobs, and so we want to make sure we're pointing a real spotlight on, are they getting jobs? Metric number four, this is pretty early in its stages, this whole open educational resource topic. I talked about MOOCs. There's also open source textbooks, and we wish that we were farther in this where we could actually tell our systems that we want you to have a certain percent doing OER, so to speak, but as a compromise, because it takes some time, you can't just do things overnight, we agreed with by 2014, MNSCU must collect data on the number of OER resources, tools, and services offered, and formulate a plan to actualize a 1% reduction in expenses directly related to the cost of instruction. And then finally, their fifth metric, I would like to really acknowledge MNSCU for the work they've done around shared services and lowering administrative costs. They have committed to $22 million reduction, and so we put that as their metric because we think that's so important. And so we say part of their goals is to reallocate that $22 million that became available through expense realignment. And again, we're so appreciative of the work they've done on that. Next, the performance metrics for the University of Minnesota,
page 12,
which is page 12. I've got the first metric is to increase by at least 1% the Twin Cities campus undergraduate four-year, five-year, six-year graduation for students of low income. We know how important it is that we want our university to serve our best and brightest students who are low income, and so we direct them to make sure that that's who they're accepting and that's and that those kids are graduating. To increase by at least 3% the total number of undergraduate STEM degrees. Again, I mentioned how much we're investing in our STEM-related fields. We want to see the outcome of that. Increase by at least 1% the 4-5 or 6-year graduation rates at the entire University of Minnesota, not just the Twin Cities campus. For fiscal year 2014, decreased by $15 million, the operating budget expenditures devoted to administration, oversight, and mission support facilities. And then finally, increase invention disclosures by 3%. As we know, you know, in order to grow our economy in the science, STEM-related fields and companies, increasing invention disclosures is key to that, and so we include it as a metric. And with that, I stand for questions.
A couple questions, Senator Bonoff. First of all, on page 6, subdivision 23, we've got the transfer of the Office of Higher Education may transfer unencumbered balances from the appropriations in this section 2. When we pass the budget, nothing's encumbered at that point. So how is this going to work? Doesn't this give kind of a just a totally free rein to the agency to do whatever they want?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is language that we have carried in the higher education bill for forever.
And that's what I assumed. So what's the history of it?
It basically allows them, I think it is consistent with some language and statute that would allow them to transfer money between programs when needs arise. And then there are some stipulations if you go to line starting on 7.5 through 7.13 that for certain transfers that they have to come to the committees with in the legislature that have jurisdiction.
When I first noticed the language, I assumed it was writer language that had been carried for a period of time because it just had the look of it. But it still strikes me. I don't know why I haven't caught this before, but or asked about it before, but it strikes me as.
And didn't they suggest leaving that out when we kept it in?
No, that's something else here.
Mr. Chair, would we like somebody from the Office of Higher Ed to?
Sure.
Address that as Ms. Grimes.
Ms. Grimes, just if you could identify yourself. And
Mr. Chair and members, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. This language gets used so that money doesn't sort of sit in silos and end up not being able to be used to benefit students. For example, the state grant program has 95 to 100,000 recipients in any given year. But try as we might, there may be a year when there are a few hundred thousand dollars that are not getting spent, and we can transfer them to, for example, the work-study appropriation so that they still go to benefit students.
Okay. So what's been the maximum of the unencumbered monies at the
Mr. Chairman, I would have to check on that and get back to you.
Okay. The other thing that struck me about the language is that there's no date. So it's not, you know, unencumbered balances at the end of a fiscal year or that's what struck me more about it was that you could do it at any time, at least under this language.
Uh, Mr. Chairman, in practice, we use each appropriation for the intended purposes, and it's only when there's some reason that there are some unexpended balances that this tends to come up.
Ms. Grimes, my question, I was just asking Mr. Nauman if he doesn't have a clear sense of the history either, that the language is such that, and not that the agency has misused this language, I'm not suggesting that, but there really is no control to the extent that you could determine at the start of the new fiscal year, you know, July 1st, that come August 1st, there's an unencumbered balance that you need to transfer to the state work study appropriation. That's what's a little bit different about it.
I understand, yeah. Mr. Chairman. The office does report whenever balances like this are transferred from one to another. We report to the chairs and ranking members of the committees and to MMB whenever this happens.
Okay. All right, I might at some point suggest language. I don't have that prepared now, but might want some further discussion. So thank you. Let me ask my other question. This is a Minskew question. On page 23, the reserves project. It appears there's some significant authority given to the Commissioner of Management and Budget relative to this. So Sarah Bonoff, how would you expect this to work?
Well, Mr. Chair, I will tell you that when I first saw the bill, they didn't even have the reporting back to the legislature, and so we now do that as well so that we can have some visibility. But as I heard about the program, the Minskew community colleges and universities appreciated both the ability to make sure they were getting the best financial return on their dollars by having access to this program, as well as taking advantage of the community relationships and supporting the local economy of the community and being part of that. But I guess I would ask Ms. King to come to the table if there are specific questions about how this will actually work.
Sure. Ms. King? So Ms. King, in particular, if you go back to your previous life as Commissioner of Finance.
Many, many years ago now, Mr. Chair.
It wasn't quite that long ago, but so if you were back being Commissioner of Management and Budget or Commissioner of Finance, do you have the control over this? There's language that says the Commissioner shall transfer the specified amount selected. So ultimately, is it up to the Commissioner then to make that determination?
Mr. Chair, the way the program worked in its pilot experience and the language that we have here is substantially the same language. We, through our board, would undertake an RFP and we would solicit interest from our outstate campuses in participating in the program. From that interest, we would establish what the likely transfer amount could be, and then we would communicate with the Commissioner of Management and Budget as to that expectation. So the Commissioner's role here is to evaluate the program and independently determine whether the cost-benefit to the taxpayer, whether the return, in other words, on this program is reasonable. And that report was done by the Commissioner at the end of the last pilot, and it's also called for here in this bill on starting on the bottom of page 23 and then proceeding on to the top of page 24. So there would be an evaluation report done by both the Commissioner and our office independently, and the Commissioner has communicated no concern about this program continuing.
Okay. So the transfer, so the language on 2319, the shall transfer language, that's not discretion on the part of the commissioner. The commissioner has done the evaluation, and so the commissioner must transfer. Is that?
That's my reading of it, Mr. Chair, and that's the language that we had in the original provision.
You can add me with the approval of Commissioner Management.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Certainly.
Okay. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, kind of a two-part question, if I could. If you could go to page 12 and 13 of the bill, that's what I'm looking at. On line 13, it says 5% of the fiscal appropriation will be available if the board meets three of the following performance goals. And then if you could then go on to page 13, line 8, which talks in terms of for the year 2014, a decrease in the university's administration oversight by $15 million. So my first question, could you explain how that works together? Bear in mind, this is the first time I've seen this bill, but it looks like we are appropriating money which will allow the university to reduce their maintenance costs, and I'm not sure I'm following that correctly. And my second part of that question, could you compare what is occurring on page 12 and 13 regarding my question to the study or the salary study report appears on number 30? I mean, is it a duplication of efforts? Is it in addition there to, if you could just compare the two for me. So that's my two-part question, Senator Bonham.
So Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, if I'm understanding you correctly, because I was trying to find exactly what line, because I think my bill is not the division report, so the lines didn't line up.
Oh.
So okay. I apologize.
Senator Bonhoff, I'm looking at the actual bill.
It's in here. Okay.
And I'm on page 12, line 13 seems to be controlling these metrics that you're referring to. So I'm trying to have you explain to me how the 5% appropriation that appears on 12.13 works with the reduction in the university spending that begins at page 13, line 8.
Very good. Okay, so we're saying that we're going to hold back 5% of the 15 appropriation, and so that comes to approximately 30 million, correct? Mid-20s. Okay, so that money is put aside based on the university coming back to us and saying that they're going to achieve that they've achieved three of these five. One of their things that we were asking them to achieve is a $15 million reduction in administrative costs. So you could say, well, you could net them out, but that's not the point. The point is their general operating and maintenance and appropriations budget that they're going to get from the state of Minnesota, 5% is going to be held back based on their achieving those metrics. And so, and one of those metrics is cut administrative costs. Now, the reporting we're asking for later in the bill is not only do we want you to just off the bat, they've done this first spans and layers report, and they've reported back to us, and they're going to finish this in July. And based on that report, they're going to be able to identify where they should cut immediately. And we want that to happen right away. And so that's a metric. But in addition, we know there's a much broader look that we all have to do at the overall administrative structure. And so later in the bill, without being specific and telling them, you know, what it'll look like, we've said, give us your plan. How are you going to cut costs? And what are you going to cut?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with your comments with regards to the encumbering money moving from department to department when you have what would appear to be not an abundance of money, but a plus on the balance. So as decision is made to move it someplace else, my question would be then, when it comes time to to do estimates for the up-and-coming biennium, is that number being reused, that top number being reused for that area? That would be my concern, and I know I sometimes we found that same thing happening in county government where if you were able to shift that around and spend it elsewhere, then you could come in next year with the total amount for that particular area that actually didn't need quite as much. So is something that you're concerned about as well, Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen, that'd be correct. Also, Mr. Nahman pointed out to me the possible contradiction with the present statute, which gives control to the commissioner to transfer monies, and that the commissioner has control of that. So there are a couple of elements, even if this language has been there throughout. Ms. Wyman, you look like you're...
Well, I don't know if this will help or not, but the way this has been done in the past is that MMB has taken, where in the past we've taken that 1% of that second year appropriation, and there has been a separate line item within the accounting system where that money has been held.
They're talking about the transfer part, not the giving the Minsky system the ability to transfer funds between. That's what they're talking about. Mr. Chair, you're going back to the original point you made, which is
right.
A concern about in this bill that we're giving the system's authority to transfer unencumbered balances.
Right.
And Mr. Chair, you know, I think you raise a good point. I don't know the unintended consequences of deleting that, so I don't have a position
neither,
on that.
And neither do I at this point. But it would appear at least on its face to be in contradiction of the statute relative to the commissioner's authority.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if Senator Pappas might have some insight on this discussion. Senator Pappas, I know that you were out of the room, so I can bring you up to speed, but there's a provision in the bill on page 6 that allows the system to transfer unencumbered balances between funds and... Oh, the Office of Higher Education.
Yes.
Yeah. And so
looks like Mr. Fuller is going to help, I think.
Well, you want to talk?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, I mean, there is not a conflict because this is a law and it specifically provides an authority to the Office of Higher Education. So as a matter of general statutory interpretation,
okay.
If you have a specific grant of authority, that authority will operate as opposed to a general grant of authority.
No, I see.
This has been in there historically, has been used.
Right.
Whether it's a good or bad idea, we have a variety of programs that have an uncertain demand for money. Mm-hmm. And the result of that uncertain demand could be unspent money for purposes, all of which people agree are fine purposes. So granted, it's extraordinary, but it responds to the circumstances that you don't want to cancel back to the general fund money that could be used for a purpose that everybody endorses.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Pappas.
And that last sentence is very important. And when I chaired the Higher Ed Committee, we did not want funds canceling back to the general fund. We wanted the higher ed funds to stay in higher ed. And the flexibility here, because some of these accounts were difficult to predict, like the reciprocity, for example, or what the needs might be for the child care grant appropriation. So the ability to transfer between one fund or another, giving them that flexibility, was really important.
Of course, you know, Senator Bonner, to play it safe, we could go around the table because I think you're the only division chair that has three former division chairs sitting here. So we could ask all of them. But,
Senator Fischbach.
Senator Stumpf.
Senator Stumpf.
So, but that's okay.
Chair, can I follow up?
I think, Senator Ingebrigtsen, did you want to follow up?
Just maybe one or two more, and then I'm done here. On the spreadsheet, Senator, what has been an issue in my area with the Minsky is the leveraged equipment account. Can you tell me what kind of an increase your budget reflects here? Compared to the last biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's one of the things that actually Minsky is most committed to. And I don't have the percentage of increase. I could ask Ms. King to come forward, but I just want to give you the philosophical underpinnings of why it's in the bill in this way. Because, you know, the University of Minnesota said they were going to use their appropriation, a large part of it, to freeze tuition, and Minscu approached it a little bit differently. The Itasca group, made up of, you know, business leaders from across the state, the Stephen Rosenstone, they did these listening sessions all over the state to find out where they were meeting the needs of business and the workforce needs and where they weren't. And one of the things we've discovered is really there is an emerging trend in manufacturing that we think is so important. And so, and I've actually now gone out to these manufacturing companies, and the thing that they all say is the kids aren't trained to use the equipment. And it's because none of these colleges and community colleges and universities have the equipment. And so Minscu, in this proposal, is committing to go out and buy that equipment. I asked the question, well, can't they just go to the businesses and work on it there? And it's just not that simple. And so, hearing from the business community, I did support Minscu's recommendation, and it is a sizable one.
Mr. Chair.
It's $19 million in total.
$19 total. The request was $21. Am I misreading that?
No, I didn't. Yes, I didn't fully fund
okay.
it.
Okay, all right. That was going to be my other question.
Right.
And yes, we're very aware of that. Actually, the industries are bringing equipment there, and they're looking for some matching dollars to upgrade it, and it certainly is a concern.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it's at right now. They're looking. They can't. I mean, the classes are filled, and they have to have this training in order to hit the road running. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, a couple questions. One suggestion, and then two suggestions, not questions. On page 10, we're talking about the Minscu item number 3. And you probably have some other follow-up legislation, or Minscu, I'm sure, does too. I think we had a similar provision for the technical colleges back in the 1990s where they had to have what they call placement rates, mm-hmm. and they had to meet a certain placement rate. And if they did not, for I think it was more than two successive years, they had to drop the course. And the rationale behind that was is that if they can't place the students that graduate out of a particular program, maybe the program isn't needed. So you might look back to that mid-1990s. I'm thinking it's actually probably in the early, maybe 93, 96, to look at how that language operated. The other one is item 4 in both the Minscu and the University of Minnesota, the savings that are generated. I'm sorry, item 5 on page 10, and then
right.
I believe it's item 4 on page
yes.
13. That reallocation, it doesn't give any direction as to how that reallocation is going to be carried out. My suggestion is that both Minscu and the University of Minnesota has a significant backlog of maintenance and repair in the both institutions, that reallocation should actually go for that. Mm. I don't have the language for that, but I think it would be it would encourage them to do that because they're not actually losing the money. They actually can move it from a reallocation of expenses, or whether it's because of a cutting of the administrative costs or whatever, but then it's actually going to go back into the maintenance and repair of their facilities.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, that's a great idea. Minscu is a little different because they put the reallocation in their budget proposal, and so they did identify within their overall structure it's absorbed, but the university did not. But I think on a going forward basis that I would entertain that language and would like to do that. I think it may be too late at this point for this metric in terms of an amendment, unless you wanted to offer that, Senator Stump.
I don't have the language right now.
Okay. Thank you. But, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I'd be happy to work with you in between now and Wednesday if you do decide to do that.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, two questions. The technical colleges under our Minsky system, just generally, can you give me a brief recap and you know, what level of satisfaction are we getting from them? Are we meeting most of their needs and requests? I know we've heard from someone in my area. And the second part of the question, the university was at an event in my district a couple weeks ago with President Kaler, and they're talking about a commitment of not raising student tuition, holding it flat if they get a certain level of funding, which are we meeting that level in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, we are. That we did support both the Minsky and the university's budget request that also was supported by the governor and put in our bill that the university would use their investment to freeze tuition. With regard to the technical schools, the thing that I don't have an answer for you in terms of broken out by technical schools. What I can tell you is the young people who have come to see me from those schools have been most concerned about debt, and I've been concerned about completion, and so we've put many things in the bill to try and drive that. But in terms of an overall report card, I think I don't have a direct answer for that right now. I think we understand how important those schools are, and that's why we've actually aligned what we're doing in K-12 to give more students access to the technical colleges. I think more and more as we go forward, we're going to see our technical college, a trend emerge where they play a greater role in our overall workforce. And so I'm hopeful that by the steps we've put in this bill, we will see the quality and the success factors increase.
Is Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, is there anybody here from Minsky that could give us just a real brief recap or commitment of what they see happening under this funding level?
Yes, I'll call on Ms. King.
Ms. King.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. And Senator, I think if I'm understanding your question, your interest is do we feel this bill is responsive to the demands we're feeling in our schools? And yes, we do.
In technical colleges with high equipment costs, Senator Ingebrigtsen touched on that a little bit, but just generally, we both share Alec Tech in our area. There's other numerous technical colleges that feel pressure, and sometimes they offer or deliver a higher per student cost because of the high equipment and hands-on nature of some of those colleges. But Mr. What's your sense of this funding level, and what part of it, because you guys determine a lot of where the money goes. Does it go to across the system? Does it just go to the eight universities? But I'm just looking for your kind of
certainly
review of that.
Mr. Chair and Senator, when we constructed our budget request at the start of this session, we did it, as Senator Bonoff mentioned, after 40 listening sessions around the state, and brought from that what we're hearing from our technical and community colleges and our state universities about the needs that they had to serve their communities. That's where the leveraged equipment proposal comes from. That's strongly supported in the technical college community because there's such high equipment requirements for those training programs. It's also where the internship proposal came from, which the senator supports in her bill. And it's also where the high demand professions initiative came from, which is also supported in this bill. So we're very pleased with the alignment we have between what we heard in our listening sessions, what we put in our budget request, and what this bill supports.
Very good. Thank you.
right. Are there further questions or amendments on the bill? Senator Bonham, if you have a technical amendment.
I do have a technical amendment. I would offer the A-19.
Yes.
It's a little more than a technical amendment. We're changing the way our tails are from the spreadsheet. Specifically with regard to leveraged equipment, when I first approached the tails, I thought to myself, well, you buy the leveraged equipment once, you don't need to keep investing in them. And then I discussed it with Senator Miller and a few others and found that there really is a strong need for continuing to support that area. So we went back up and honored the system request for the tails. And so this amendment reflects that change, the corresponding language.
Let me just ask, Mr. Nauman, have you a chance to look at this?
Mr. Chair, and yes, I have. And this conforms with all the discussions that we've had.
Okay. All right. Senator Bonhoff moves the A-19 amendment. Is there discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, one other question.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, if you could go back to the Minitex portion of the bill, which is, I think, right at... Anyway, it doesn't describe very much in detail as to what the Minitex the appropriation delivers. Does the current program... allow access for VINSCU and University of Minnesota students to access publications only in the library, or can they access it with Wi-Fi and smartphones?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, they can access it online too, but your question is at the heart of the increase. Given all that's gone on with online access, they came forward with a proposal to increase through targeted investments and the ability to have everything online and shared across the state. And I don't know if Ms. Keefe is here. Oh, Tricia Grimes will speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, right. Senator, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. The Minitex, MinLink appropriation, the money comes to the Office of Higher Education, and then it flows through. Really, it's operated out of the University of Minnesota, and it is used for both documents and books that physically travel from one campus or one library to another, and for purchase of online databases that give people all over the state access to information, both the academic libraries, and then there's a program called Minnesota Knows that allows public library card holders to get access to many of the databases also. Does that answer your question?
It does, but I'm wondering if it's limited to students, or if it's if it's limited to students who are registered in college, in the university, or MinSCU, or would Senator Miller's MOOCs be able to access this as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, if I understand the question correctly, students who are registered and enrolled on a campus clearly would have access to the system and the databases that it purchases and the electronic, databases. And then public library card holders also in the state generally have access to at least a good share of the databases. But I think that a user coming in from another state would have to enter some kind of an ID number and would find an obstacle.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, and so I think actually all of the Minnesotans are eligible to access it, and that's really the purpose of it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I have the original bill actually now before me, and this really is about the virtual library. This added investment is to be able to take what we've already got and make sure that we've got the largest capacity in a virtual library system. So it's pretty exciting.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have Senator Miller?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I just have – I want to further clarify the question that Senator Westrum had earlier about the MOOCs or the tuition-free educational courses. The bill doesn't set an actual dollar amount that it can exceed. It sets a percent, and members on line on page 23, line 5 through 9, it says does not exceed 2% of the most recent average undergraduate tuition as required fees as of January 1st of the current year, charged for full-time students at all degree-granting institutions as published annually by the United States Department of Education. And it's also important to note that if it does exceed that 2%, this language does not prohibit any institution from applying in the state of Minnesota. This is just saying if it does not exceed, they do not have to register in the state of Minnesota. So I just wanted to make that clear to the committee.
Okay. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, is there any funding for a DREAM Act or similar type program in here? I didn't hear you talk about that at all, and I haven't.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, there is not. We heard the DREAM Act in our committee, and we passed it as a standalone bill, and it's in finance awaiting action. I did not carry the funding for that in this bill.
Very good.
And Senator Westrom, that gives me the opportunity just to mention to committee members that, you know, this week we're going to do and all the omnibus finance bills, I think I indicated at the outset. And starting next week, we'll start hearing the individual bills that have been passing out of the divisions to the full committee. Do we have any? Senator Westrom, did you?
Mr. Chair, on that, would that ultimately be part of the higher ed target, or do you have another target created for potential funding of other bills like that that are standalone, or how? Generally, how do you?
Senator Westrom, in some of the bills have been carried. The money has been carried within the bills. Generally, though, there's a separate ability to fund at a small level some of these individual bills. The exception to that, to be fair to committee members, would probably be the pension bill, which potentially might have a larger cost, but we're tracking that. And as the bills come up, I can certainly indicate as such. Further discussion, amendments on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to, if we are getting close to wrap up, I wanted to take the time to thank some people for their work on the bill. Oh, but Senator Wieger has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before the close by Senator Bonoff, I wanted to thank her as well. She mentioned a number of programs in early education through 12th grade, and we'll hear more about that tomorrow. But the whole system, the P20, as we call it, is linked together. Provisions in here for gathering data, the longitudinal data, to track the progress of students ultimately to the workforce to get a better handle on what programs work, what's effective, so we can more strategically invest our resources. So I wanted to thank her for that and for initiatives that are looking at better testing so that ultimately students are ready for college career decisions, and there's that close coordination that's going on. It's reflected in this bill. So thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you.
Further questions or amendments? Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to thank my staff, to Ms. Weidman, Mr. Fuller just did outstanding work, my committee administrator, Dave Kornecki, my legislative assistant, Sean Oyes, and then the committee members themselves, because really they were a very engaged participatory committee. And in particular, the lead on the Republican side, Senator Miller, and my vice chair, Senator Claussen, both of them put a tremendous amount of work in making sure that the bill reflected the consensus of the committee.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, Senator Bonoff moves that Senate File 1236 as amended be recommended to pass, and staff is instructed to conform